Also, in 1778, a worker accidentally spilled strong nitric acid onto a large portion of the image. To everyone's astonishment, only slight stains appeared, which can still be seen in the upper right side.
Wow.
Nitric acid. It's just, it was like, no problem.
Yeah. Imagine being that worker.
Yeah. Bishop.
Yeah. Peace and blessings. My name is Khalil Hattar.
My name is Louis Kane.
Khalil Hattar.
Wait, who's the real Khalil then?
Well, the real Khalil, please stand up. Flying back to the 20s.
Lady of Guadalupe. Andrew Wolf.
Andrew Wolf, there you are. Now I'm back in rhythm. You kind of threw me off too.
That was why. That's how I was going to troll you, yeah.
Oh, that's what you were saying before. Yeah. Okay. So instead of preparing to have a serious conversation on Our Blessed Mother.
Hey, man, you got to start it out.
You wanted to troll.
And then you go.
Our other idea.
Our Lady of Guadalupe, let's go.
You guys are just going to get up and walk through.
Let's do it.
Our other idea was just to say Khalil Hattar the same time
that
you were saying.
At the exact same time you say it.
Wow, that would be great.
Yeah.
Great. See, now you can't use it because you've already said it.
We could have been like an echo effect kind of thing for each person, you know, really intense.
Oh, okay. So. I like it. What are we talking about today?
Dios te salve Maria.
Ooh.
The English version.
Actually, that just meant Hail Mary.
Yes.
But Our Lady of Guadalupe.
We're talking about the OLG.
We're celebrating her feast tomorrow, December 12th. We're filming this December 11th. So lots of interesting facts. Fascinating story. Lots of things that defy all science. So let's go.
Ooh.
What is going on?
So you trolled the whole start of the episode.
Yeah, that's mine, man.
You know we're out of groove right now.
Are you going to do the recap for the story?
Oh, Guadalupe?
Yeah.
We're just going to jump right into
it. Let's just go.
Okay. So this is a special episode then. We're just focusing on Our Lady of Guadalupe. Do we want to say we're going to throw out like 5 or 8 fun facts on Our Lady?
The list I found has 10.
You found a list with 10.
Some of them get kind of lame toward the end, though, so maybe let's go with 5.
Let's go with 5.
5.
Yeah. 5 is good. It's a solid number. Carry it around with you. I guess you carry around 10, too.
That's right. It's all about the list you find, man.
If it's one hand, not two hands.
So we are talking about Our Lady of Guadalupe. We could start with a recap, so we'll keep this brief because the story is like everywhere. But Our Lady appeared to St. Juan Diego. Now St. Juan Diego. Back then, he just went by Juan. And December 9th, are you fact checker?
Yes, I am.
I need you to fact check. On December 9th, I was going to say 2020.
This is happening right now.
This is live.
It's going to be breaking news. Our Lady of Guadalupe reappears.
Yeah. No one's ever heard of her.
Yeah.
You're going to open your coat and there's just the tilma.
That's actually one of the fun facts. People did know of an Our Lady of Guadalupe before the Our Lady of Guadalupe.
No way.
That was one of the facts.
That's not on my list, Khalil.
You gotta, I'm sorry. We're going to deviate from this list of yours. Back to the story. So Our Lady appears to Juan Diego December 9th, 1531.
Correct.
Thank you. And so a little context prior to that, why Our Lady appeared, I think is important.
Yeah.
And what always strikes me with this, I don't know what you guys think, we have a way of romanticizing the Americas before Europeans came. And so I know that's a very broad statement, but we have a way of like romanticizing the people that lived here, the way that they lived and interacted with each other before, you know, settlers came to the shores, before voyagers and explorers came, whether it was to the Caribbeans, whether it was to the United States, wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you actually look at the conditions, it's unfair to those people to paint them with such a broad brush.
Yeah.
Because they were such a unique and diverse group of people. They had their own ways of communing with one another, but then of dealing with other tribes and dealing with other peoples. There was war, there was famine. It wasn't like this just romanticized view of, you know, Great Plains and very peaceful. I think we do a disservice to history to kind of hold that view up.
Yeah, and even just think about probably all the different like ancient civilizations in South America and Central America, how they probably all had their own unique cultures and
religions, and
ways
everything.
Of relating to one another, and that's interesting too.
That's the thing that strikes me. It's almost like we want to, for some reason, in popular culture, we look back and we we see a people that's like connected to the land and to the, and to, you know, in harmony with Mother Nature, and almost like there was this peace that transcends anything that we have today. But that's artificial. Like that's where I go back to saying it's almost like we're romanticizing how they live.
Well, and there were so many different types too of like cultures in the Americas, depending on where you went. Because, you know, you have like the Aztecs, the Mayans, the Incans, then all of the ones throughout like where the United States is today. So it's like each and every one of those had these very different cultures for the most part.
I remember I've been in Mexico a couple times, and one time I was in the Yucatan region, and we went to this place where there's like underground rivers and stuff like that. And there's this one place that they said they had human sacrifices would be offered there, and they would push these usually young women into this to offer them up to the gods. And I remember just like this eerie feeling of like thinking of how like tons, I don't remember the number, but so many people have been sacrificed in this place that I was standing. And just, it was a wild, eerie feeling.
And there is some beauty like to this notion of kind of maybe being closer to the land and being in harmony with nature.
Yeah.
And, you know, respecting God's creation in that way. There is some beauty there. But you also look at some of the actual historical facts that these people left behind, historical accounts, like the Aztecs in the area of Mexico where Our Lady appeared. By their own accounts, and this was something that they promoted, they'd sacrifice up to 250,000 people a year in ritual sacrifice. And those were people that they were able to win over in conquest and enslave. And there was another account that said that the dedication of a new temple, it would take 80,000 lives of sacrifice, right, to consecrate that temple to whomever God it was being consecrated to. And so when you actually put that in context, you look at history through that lens, you know, it's not like it was, something was like forced on them or war and fighting and disease and was brought on them by whoever it was, it's missionaries or, you know, like I said, Europeans or travelers or settlers. There was that whole movement a couple months ago to tear down Blessed Junipero Serra, who went through the California territories that we know today and brought Christianity and really wanted to spread the gospel in a powerful and visible way. But he was seen as like one of these people that just imposed European ideals on a relatively peaceful populace, relatively peaceful collection of tribes.
Yeah, it's kind of different when you think of this cult, these cultures that sacrificed hundreds of thousands each year, and then you're right. Like we have this weird idealized picture that we try to paint of them as these like very peaceful, loving people, I guess, nonviolent.
Yeah,
you know. But I guess it's also because nowadays we don't really even the idea of human sacrifice. That's just not really a thing we even think about. I mean, I'm sure it's happening in places throughout the world still, but it's definitely not like in the predominant culture.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things we kind of
or cannibalism like that
or cannibalism.
That's so foreign to our thought.
Yeah.
But there are some places that still practice cannibalism. I mean, it's remote.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's still a thing that happens.
Yeah. Donner party. Yeah. You know.
Well, I don't know about that. That was probably more necessity than anything. I don't know anything about
I'm just
that
kidding.
Story.
Yeah. That was a very ugly story, but that's
so not to paint anybody with a negative, not to like look at them through a negative lens, but let's take an accurate account of the conditions that Mary, why she would, you know, manifest such a bold and powerful expression of herself. I mean, she actually appeared in the image and presence of these people.
In their likeness, too.
In their likeness.
What happened to this recap?
So that's the context.
Yeah.
We would kind of...
The cultural context.
Yeah, it adds a little depth to the recap. So the story, why Mary came...
The midst of this Aztec culture.
Yeah, well,
predominantly.
That's one side of it. The cool thing is, and one of our fun facts is, in Europe at the time, the Reformation's taking place, and so you have Martin Luther who pins his 95 thesis to the doors of the church, and you see this exodus of countries and just millions of Catholics from the church.
Mm-hmm.
So this warring, this division is taking place. And we probably know that because it's in our history books, right? Mm-hmm. We understand the split of the Protestant Reformation, mm-hmm. right? This protesting against the church. So that's also taking place. So you've got this like the rise of the and the prevalence of this kind of I don't want to say almost sinister, but human sacrifice can't be labeled as anything else. And that's not the only thing that defines them, but that's kind of the condition of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the Reformation happening here where people are leaving the church. And it's in that moment that Mary decides to appear, as she always does,
yeah.
to like this humble peasant. And that's Juan Diego. So we pick up the recap from there. Should I recap or do you guys want to recap?
We're going to need fact checkers if I'm recapping. So I believe December 9th, because the Virgin Mary appeared to Juan Diego twice. Mm-hmm. It was the first time she said to go to the bishop to build a church where the mm-hmm. vision was, mm-hmm. I believe, right? So then he goes to the bishop and the bishop says, directly demand the sign of the roses?
So I can't. Yeah. So Mary appears on the hill of Tepeyac just outside of Mexico City and she asks that Juan Diego go to the bishop and request a chapel be built on the site of the apparition.
Appeared, yeah.
And so he does, right? I mean, I don't know what I would have done in that moment, but he's fled
back to Europe. I'm kidding. He's got on a boat, was headed back. Well, actually, he would have never gone.
He was an indigenous.
He was Aztec. Yeah. But.
So we know how Andrew would have handled it.
Yeah.
So the bishop demands the sign of the roses, and then the Virgin Mary again on December 12th, which is when we traditionally celebrate her feast day.
Yeah.
The feast day of the apparition. Then he tells, because I'm missing this little part in the middle. So he goes back to the bishop, and that's when he like presents the tilma. He opens up his, which was like the traditional like kind of cloak garment,
mm-hmm.
and he opens it up, and the roses, Castilian roses, pour out, and then there's the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe on the tilma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting fact about the Castilian roses is that they were only found in Spain, and they didn't even bloom at that time.
That's crazy. So that's like, so it was in winter.
Yeah.
It was in mm-hmm. December.
And so did the fact check. Did the Virgin Mary, did she tell Juan Diego to like trust and just go back?
I'm guessing. Yeah, so Juan Diego goes to the bishop and lays the request before him. Like the Blessed Mother appeared to me and she said that she'd want a chapel on this hill. And at that moment, the bishop asks for a sign. And so Juan Diego goes back to deliver the message to Mary. But the following day, I've seen different accounts of this. I believe it was his uncle who had fallen ill. And so Juan Diego, instead of returning to the site of the apparition, stays home to tend to his uncle. And the day after that, his uncle asks, can you find somebody to hear my confession? So the day after that, Juan Diego goes out to secure a priest to come hear his confession. And instead of going the normal route that he does, to avoid the possibility of running into Mary, he goes around the hill only to find her there as well. And that's where they have the exchange. And she gives him a tilma full of roses that were initially native to Spain. They bloomed in the area, but not during that time of the year.
Did he pick the roses or did she just give them to him?
No, it was a field that he picked roses from.
Yeah. Where she appeared was in this field of roses that doesn't bloom during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so he collects these roses. He kind of just gathers them up into his tilma, which is like, I don't know, 16th century hoodie or something like that.
Made out of cactus.
So it's basically like burlap material.
Yeah.
So he kind of just gathers them all in. He's carrying them to the bishop. And then as he drops the tilma to show this sign, you know, these roses, the image of Our Lady is imprinted on the front of his tilma.
He didn't even know that. Like he had no idea that the image was imprinted. He thought the sign was just going to be the roses.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's told to take from the roses and to show them to the bishop, that'll be the sign. What do you guys think of the bishop's response, though? Like, I thought of Jesus immediately when people asked him for a sign,
mm-hmm.
and he said, a sign shall not be given to you, but the sign of Jonah. And here we see the bishop who is being confronted with this situation, and he asks for a sign.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think, though, because like in the New Testament, Jesus fulfills all of the Old Testament. You know, he's the completion of every, it all builds up to Jesus. So I, like everything they needed to know that he was the true Messiah was there. Whereas I guess in the case of Juan Diego, it's almost more understandable that the bishop questioned, because, you know, Juan Diego could have just been this like insane peasant. So I don't know. I wonder if that's a rational way of looking at it. It's like, mm-hmm. it was actually pretty reasonable of him to ask for a sign. Because, mm-hmm. You know, what if like tons of random people just were always saying these miraculous things? I don't know.
Yeah, that goes back to our Eucharistic miracles conversation. You have to test. Right? There's things that goes into like verifying if a miracle is true.
Or in this case, an apparition, yeah. Which I get, yeah, is a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was one of those things, like the bishop, because it didn't happen to him, somebody's claiming that this is happening. He needs something to verify, right? This is authentic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is real. This is something supernatural that's worthy of following up on. Yeah. So it's not really an equal analogy or comparison to make. I only thought of that because I'm like, well, should I be asking God for signs? Or should I be asking for miracles? Or should I be asking for... And I had to really reflect on it a little bit more to understand how the ask was being made.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. How did the bishop respond then when he brought the sign?
Well, funny enough, you should say, do you want to talk about the eyeballs?
No, I'm not sure.
We actually, so depending on how you study the tilma, microscopic images have been taken of Mary's eyeballs.
Yeah.
And the bishop, again, this is open to some interpretation, but it's said that the image of the bishop, as well as those in the room, are imprinted on the eyeballs of Mary in the tilma.
That is incredible.
So I guess if we wanted to see how the bishop reacted, maybe it's like slack-jawed, right? Like, oh my God. And we have that recorded for however long the tilma lasts.
That is incredible.
500 years now.
That is incredible.
But he obviously responded favorably because that tilma was then placed in his private chapel.
Yeah.
A miracle was attributed to it. And we know today that a basilica was built in honor of Mary on that site as she requested.
Yeah. That's interesting too, just like thinking about his response. It's almost like he asked for a sign in faith, mm-hmm. instead of like an asked for a sign in like a place of, I don't know, like just thinking about how like the Pharisees talked to Jesus about a sign in the Gospels. It was probably such a different sign because he did come to believe so easily, maybe, that he was asking for.
What do you mean by that? Come ask for a sign in faith.
Like he,
I like where you're going. I just flesh it out.
Like maybe the bishop, I'm just trying to put myself in the bishop's shoes. Like this man comes in claiming a supernatural thing that the Mother of God has appeared to him, asking him to build a church. And I wonder like in that moment, like what the bishop thought or felt. And when he asked for a sign of faith, I wonder, or a sign, I wonder if he was, I guess I wonder what was going on in his mind or in his feelings, like what he thought and felt in that moment. And if it came from a place like, Jesus, this is real, this is from you, show me.
Mm.
But if it's not from you, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Mm.
And because Mary wanted that to happen in such a clear way, she came about in such a clear way with a sign.
Mm. That's awesome. I could definitely, I can see how you would read that into the situation. Because it's hard to know what the man was thinking
other
than to like read his actions.
Uh-huh.
But you're almost giving like a little description of his intent.
Maybe. Yeah, I definitely don't know it, but it seems like it could be.
Yeah, that's what
true.
It would seem like it could be, yeah.
Whereas that's so different than like how the Pharisees questioned Jesus for a sign,
mm-hmm.
of like trying to trip him up out of their own self-righteousness.
Yeah. Kind of makes me think of, we had this, I wish it was a Eucharistic miracle happened here. So we had, with our homebound ministry, like bringing communion to the homebound, one time there was some hosts in a Pyx, and they like, it was interesting how a part like turned red.
Mm-hmm.
And so they returned, I guess, so they broke off a piece to serve to the person at home, and they returned the picks, and it looked like it was like a bloody part of the host.
Whoa.
And this happened several months ago. And so at first I was like, man, this is really cool. Is this like a miracle? So we put, because generally you dissolve any hosts that are like that.
Yeah.
And so we did that and put it in the tabernacle, and it didn't dissolve for like 3 weeks. It just was taking forever. So I would check it like every third day.
I remember you mentioning this. Yeah. And I was like,
I know. And I was so sad because after 3 weeks, it was just normal. So.
No Eucharistic miracle.
I know. I was really hoping.
Eucharistic coincidence?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. It's interesting because it's like, I don't know. How long does it take for
bread to dissolve?
That, exactly. Right.
Yeah, that's
it's like 3 weeks. Yeah. I kept checking. And like for the first 2 weeks, it was like, it still had that red part. And then the third week, I finally go back in, and it's just completely dissolved and was gone. I was like, that's kind of sad. But like that kind of gets to like how the bishop was probably thinking. Like, I don't know. Maybe he was really excited like I was. Like, what if this is true? You know, like, that's awesome. Like, this apparition.
Well, and then you look at the long-lasting fruit of that.
Yeah.
The conversion. We said, you know, the situation was, it was a very a pagan culture. Mm-hmm. That existed, mm-hmm. and it was a plurality of religions and beliefs, but the way Mary appeared so specifically in the image and the likeness of the people, mm-hmm. with the almost like a hieroglyph, mm-hmm. right? That's what the Telma image becomes. It was something for those the natives of the time, the indigenous of the time, to be able to read this hieroglyph and to see their symbols and their signs, to see the stars on her cloak, to see the sun burst behind her, mm-hmm. to see her look like them, right, spoke to them. And you see this, like, mass conversion.
Yeah.
That is, like, that's what sends goosebumps up your arm.
It's incredible. How many people were baptized after Our Lady of Guadalupe?
I think the estimates are, like, 10 million.
Yeah, I was about to say, this has an estimate. It said, I like it because the 10th in this list is about the fact that the Protestant Reformation was going on in Europe. Because
so we hit one
of
the
losing 10. All these Catholics over in Europe.
Yeah.
And in the Americas, it was
you
the same
this
number,
boom,
10 million. Yeah,
yeah, of Catholics coming to the church.
Said in the decade following her appearance, 10 million Indians converted to Catholicism.
In a decade.
So, in a decade.
And how there can't have been that many people that lived in Mexico during the time. I mean, Mexico wasn't a country then, probably, but like, was it a country?
I don't know, but I think that goes back to the whole, like, we think of, there were millions of natives that lived here.
Yeah.
Before we even came. So it wasn't like this just empty land with, a dozen or so people here. And
a dozen.
So,
yeah.
No, I mean, there were
millions civilization.
Of people. Yeah, civilizations here. They built pyramids. They left traces of who they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so on that scene, Mary just kind of like bursts forth and says, you know what? The missionaries have been trying, but I'm going to give you guys a hand.
And 10 million people are baptized in a decade.
How amazing is that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I read somewhere that the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe is one of the top visited pilgrimage sites in the world. So even until today, I mean, you think of how many pilgrimage sites there are.
Yeah.
For it to remain one of the top.
And it's just crazy that the Tilma is still, you know, undamaged or anything. Because it was made out of cactus. It should have only lasted, we were talking about this beforehand, but it should have only lasted like 50 years.
Yeah, I've heard anywhere from like, 50, depending on how it's made and used, 5 years, 15, 30 years, 50 the most.
Yeah, but we're at like 490. So it's like
incredible.
It's like whatever number you attach.
And the things that's happened to it, right? It wasn't always protected. Right now it's behind a glass case, but that wasn't always the case.
Yeah. Ooh.
No pun intended. No play on the words there. That wasn't always the case. Like there, it was in the bishop's quarters. It was put in this initial chapel that was built. Candle smoke would have enveloped it. Smoke from incense. A bomb actually went off in front of it.
Also, in 1778, a worker accidentally spilled strong nitric acid onto a large portion of the image. And to everyone's astonishment, only slight stains appeared, which can still be seen in the upper right side.
Wow.
Nitric acid. It's just, it was like no problem.
Yeah. Imagine being that worker.
Yeah, Bishop.
Yeah, Bishop.
Please don't fire me.
He would be like the living embodiment of that Homer Simpson meme where he falls into the bushes. Like, where'd Steve go? He wasn't. He's just gone.
Yeah. And you're right. Yeah, in 1921, a bomb concealed in some flowers was placed on the altar directly under the image.
People have to look this up. Really, because we're talking about it. Google this.
Yeah,
there was a Mary is the Telma's above the altar, mm-hmm. and then there's a cross next to the altar. A bomb's hidden in flowers.
And then there's a marble altar rail and windows 150 feet away, which were completely destroyed.
Yes, and the cross we still have is just completely bent out of shape. I mean, it's amazing. Like, this like gold-plated cross, completely jacked out of shape, and yet this cactus
cloth
image. Burlap tilma is still there. Like that,
like the clothes,
amazing.
The clothes of a peasant.
Yeah,
the clothes of someone that had no money. The clothes that of someone that it, I'm sure, was probably as pretty much as cheap as it could possibly made.
Yeah.
Is here 500 years later. This is so crazy.
This defies all science. I love it.
It's so crazy. And the image itself isn't even painted.
Yeah,
it's more of like a it's floating on the material. Like, it's not even ingrained into the material.
Yeah.
That it's on.
Yeah. And then there was no undersketch. That's a big thing.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
So the one we talked about, a couple things. So our astonishing facts about Our Lady of Guadalupe, it's floating. Like, the image is floating on the actual cactus cloth. It should have disintegrated by now,
mm-hmm.
but yet 500 years later, it's still going strong.
Fact check, 289 or 489. Sorry.
You fact check your own fact check.
I know. Yeah. I did fact check my own fact check. 489 years.
I'll round up. And then the third one was, there's no undersketch. So what does that mean?
Yeah. So almost all artists would originally, before painting anything, would sketch it. And they've used infrared technology and a bunch of other techniques, and there's no evidence of any kind of undersketch or underdrawing whatsoever, mm-hmm. which would have been, quote, inconceivable that an artist in the 16th century would paint a portrait without first doing a drawing on it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's so wild.
And especially because if you've ever looked at an image of the Tilma, it's so detailed.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. It's like, it's not just like a crappy painting. It's like lifelike. The eyes, like, there's crazy facts about the eyes. You can even see, like, veins on the eyelids.
Well, we said they've done imaging of the pupil, and there's, like, an impression of Juan Diego, and others have seen in that the bishop and those who were in the room at the time of the unveiling of the Tilma.
So the idea that could be painted without an underdrawing is just impossible.
Yeah. Or
even for a matter of fact, even with a sketch.
Yeah, you're talking, this is 1531. Like, they didn't have the technique to do that or the ability. I mean, we're talking on a microscopic level to detect some of this stuff, which is just, it's amazing. So we're on the Tilma then. It sounds like that's where the facts are going. So we said it's kind of floating. It hasn't been destroyed as of yet. It hasn't decayed. There was no undersketch. The color of Mary's cloak hasn't faded yet.
Yeah, and it's like really vibrant. I've heard like insanely vibrant colors that couldn't be replicated, really, especially during that time with the technology that they had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you look at it, not only is it vibrant,
uh-huh.
but then you look at other paintings and works of art from that time using the same color of paint have all faded.
Yeah.
And then you see, again, on this peasant's cloak, this vibrant color turquoise that still radiates today.
What is there any significance to the color? Because that's such a unique color.
Mm-hmm. I've heard different interpretations of like why the color.
Uh-huh.
But if you look at the color in combination with the stars, first of all, the color was culturally resonated with the indigenous.
Oh.
And so it had significance on a cultural level. But then you add on top of that the constellation of stars that sits within that sea of turquoise is supposed to symbolize the sky.
Mm.
And so you have this turquoise blue with the stars, and the stars themselves are arranged in such a way, like the layers of complexity here and detail is just amazing. The stars are arranged in such a way that they reflect the constellations in the night sky when Mary appeared.
It's so amazing.
And they're shown from the views from out, a view from outside of the heavens. So it's like in reverse, like what? God.
It's looking. Almost mirrored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, explain that.
So let me just read it directly because it's kind of complicated. So, the constellations are shown as viewed from outside the heavens, in other words, in reverse. It is as if we have a picture from someone looking at it from outside the universe.
Whoa.
It is a snapshot of heaven and earth from the very moment that Juan Diego saw Our Lady.
Oh, that's so interesting.
So,
isn't that beautiful?
That is so beautiful.
So, and then there's the thing about Leo, the constellation. Do you know about that? Do you want to?
Go ahead. Let me,
yeah.
There's
so,
three constellations.
So the constellation Virgo, representing virginal purity, appears over the area of Mary's heart, signifying her immaculate and virginal purity. And the constellation Leo, the lion, is over her womb. The lion represents Jesus Christ because Christ is the lion of the tribe of Judah. This emphasizes that Christ the King is present in Mary's womb. The perfect placement of stars in their various constellations illustrates the infinite intelligence behind the miraculous image. Mm. So just everything about the image is just perfectly designed. So, what's the third one? Because it was
the crown, the constellation, the corona. Yeah. That sat by Mary's head, signifying the crown that Mary wears as Queen of Heaven and Earth. Mm.
And then she's on the moon that is underneath her is the exact same like shape as the moon
as it would
have appeared, which is really cool too. And when I was in Mexico City, I noticed that the moon was like at that similar angle, which was cool to see.
Huh.
So you've been to Mexico City? Have you been to the Basilica?
Yeah, I've been twice.
He's also got another crazy story. So it's time. It's time. I already heard it.
Story time.
You didn't get to hear it.
I haven't.
Here we go.
Let's hear this.
So I was on a retreat in Mexico, and this one man brought this tilma that was significant for some reason. I can't remember why. It had something to do with of his replica of the tilma, and it was there at the retreat, and many people were going up to it and putting a stethoscope, or however you say that word, at Mary's heart, at her womb. And I never had this experience, but many, many people did, that they heard a heartbeat.
That could have just been their own heartbeat.
It could definitely have not
been. That would have been hilarious.
It could definitely not have been anything special, but it was like a really, it was cool to see like the response and like.
Yeah. I feel like I just debunked your story.
While fact checking over here.
I didn't mean to do that. But you do, that does happen when you put, it's a good thing as Catholics, we scrutinize ourselves.
That's right.
Like more than anyone. Like if you're going to tell me there's a miraculous occurrence.
Yeah.
You better come hard. Like with some evidence or else we're just going to.
This is when Louis busts out a recording that a friend sent. Yeah.
But if you put in stethoscopes, you can hear your own heartbeat.
Yeah. It totally could have been something totally not.
But maybe
miraculous.
It would have been miraculous like to them in the sense that it helped open them up to receive God in a new way.
Yeah.
Like with you in the Eucharist, like the 3 days, the 3 weeks. That probably wasn't like a full on Eucharistic miracle.
Uh-huh.
But it still
opened. It was to me, Kalo.
No, I'm kidding. But it still opened you up in a different
that's
way.
That's very true. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think that's like kind of cool when you think about like signs and miracles too. Like how do signs and miracles impact our faith? Well, we have like huge miracles that are scientifically objective, like the tilma, which can like do like, that's like, can be really impactful for our faith, but even just like the little ways that we see God working in our lives. Okay, maybe we can't objectively say this is God doing this in my life, but by saying like, okay, God does love me. God does want to show, like God does want to manifest himself to me in my life. And then when he does, it doesn't necessarily mean that it might be this huge miracle like the tilma.
It's a gift for you.
It's a gift for us. And then we see what kind of fruit it bears in our lives. Mm-hmm. Like, this could totally just be me listening to my own heartbeat, but it doesn't change the reality that Mary really does love me. Mm-hmm. And if this is helping me bring her like closer, it doesn't mean like I need to go say this definitely happened, but like, it's just like a way of God really is working in our lives. And sometimes it's scientifically objective. And sometimes it might just, be a little sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Because like with the Eucharistic thing that happened, it kind of was like a slap in the face because I'd been struggling. And maybe it was a sign that God directly chose to help me. Because it's like, I know I had been struggling with my faith in the Eucharist, especially with like the lockdowns. I was definitely going through like a dry period in my prayer life. And that was kind of like the slap in the face I needed.
Wake up.
From God.
Yeah.
And it was also interesting just the fact that it took so long for the blood-like color to dissolve. It was just very weird.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I don't know. Maybe it was something interesting. Like, God can do whatever he wants for that kind of stuff. But it's like, to me, I was like, you know, it did something good for me. It helped me, like, turn back to God and, like, get my act together, so to say, with my prayer life. Even though it wasn't objectively, scientifically fact. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
But it's like, it's even in those like little moments that God's still calling you deeper into, like maybe even was just like a wake up call of like thinking about the Eucharist in a miraculous way. Because the Eucharist
and
is
the fact
a miracle.
That it is literally the body and blood of Christ.
Yeah, like that doesn't change.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easy to forget that.
Yeah.
Just under the appearance of bread. So bread and wine.
Speaking of body, the tilma always registers a temperature of 98.6 degrees. I think that's another fascinating fact.
That's amazing.
For our list. You like that transition?
That was pretty good.
I was waiting for us to end on the word body so I can make that segue.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. There you go. Are you listening to anything I was saying?
Yeah, where were we?
You're just like waiting for me to start mouthing the word body.
Hi, my name is Louis Cade.
A demonstrable fact that no matter what the surrounding temperature, season, or weather, the image remains at an even 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
It's so beautiful. Why do you think Mary wanted to? Why did she want to appear to our like to show us like in such a dramatic way in this miracle?
I thought, you know, I was thinking that like, but then who am I to? Who am I to say like when God can choose to manifest His love for us?
Yeah.
And so, like, why aren't you doing that now?
Yeah.
Right. We kind of recounted the historical context in which Mary came and the fruit of it, these like mass conversions. Mm-hmm. But it's like there's so much that's happening now in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why aren't we seeing? And so I don't know, who are we to say when, but I think God calls us to be, you know, we actually just recorded the mass intro for this week. And the psalm response comes from Mary's Magnificat, called Mary's Song, Luke chapter 1, where she proclaims the greatness of God. And so it's like we want God to reveal Himself in this great, powerful, really explicit, boom, slap you across the face kind of way. But most of the times He wants us to be that greatness, and He wants to manifest in and through us.
Mm-hmm.
And not to lose sight of that. Like, that's more powerful. If we can be those kind of little agents of change and of God's hope and mercy, we're going to affect more people and we're going to draw ourselves closer to God rather than just kind of like this one-off miracle that happens every so often.
Yeah, it's like kind of all about God's plan of salvation too, which happens in so many different ways. It happens in big miracles and it happens in you know, just loving our neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, He wants us, you mentioned the plan of salvation. That's what the Bible is. It's just the recounting of God's trying to get us to draw closer to Him and to live and act on His love.
Yeah. One thing I think is so interesting about apparitions in general, too, is that the people that Mary appears to almost always is someone that's poor, who's uneducated, who has no status in the world.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about that in our own faith, too. It's like, when we always cling to wanting to be the best or like just like our own pride or our own ego, we kind of cut out God in a sense. But like it's the poor that receive the image of Mary through apparitions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just reflects that value of humility.
Yeah.
And it's the poor, and it's not only just we think of the poor, we tend to think of the poor in need.
Yeah.
But it's the poor in spirit, the poor in heart, the poor in humility, kind of not really building ourselves up in our own eyes, but always humbling ourselves before God.
He has cast down the mighty from their thrones and has lifted up the lowly. I mean, the words of Mary in the Magnificat, it's like when we are always striving after our own pride and our own ego and our own control, we're the ones on the thrones that God has to cast off. But when we realize that we are, like, in the word is of Saint Augustine, we're a beggar before God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we realize that that's who, like, we are in absolute need of Him, Jesus can lift us up, and He manifests Himself to us in a powerful way, like He did, I mean, incredibly with Juan Diego.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so beautiful.
Awesome.
Pace Benedictus.
Yeah, we're gonna wrap it up, but let's recap. So, what were the? This was like a really quick overview of the miracle of Our Lady of Guadalupe. So we focused a lot on the Telma.
So I think the first one was the fact that it all happened at the same time as the Protestant Reformation.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went into the eyes, I believe. So the detail in the eyes, you can literally see Juan Diego like being seen in the Virgin Guadalupe's eyes, and as well as the bishop and those in the room. The fact that the painting, the mural, however you want to say it, it's like floating on the cactus, and there's no undersketch, and the cloak should have deteriorated in like 50 years. It shouldn't have lasted almost 500 years.
Or after the nitric acid.
Especially, or the bomb. Explosion. Or the bomb. Yeah. You know, just little things that could have damaged it. Let's see. So cloak could have been destroyed, or wasn't destroyed, but should have. what was our fourth one? Temperature? Mm-hmm. Is that where we went from that? Yeah, 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. And
the conversion of 10 million people.
Conversion of 10 million people. There we go.
And then a big note.
Yeah, that's right. 10 million people baptized in the Americas within the 10 years following the apparition.
In lasting effects.
Yeah.
I mean,
since then, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She is Our Lady. I mean, she's a lady of the Americas.
Of the Americas. Yeah. And it's not just the Mexican people, really. They call her mother, and she's so close and near and dear to them, mm-hmm. and especially within the culture.
Mm-hmm.
But the Americas, that's us, right? Mm-hmm. That's everyone from Canada on down.
Yeah.
Right? Mary watches over us. Yeah. And in the words that she gives to Juan Diego, I am here, I'm your mother, right? And let's just take confidence in that.
Yeah.
We usually wrap it up in a prayer, but being that we're talking about Our Lady, how about a Hail Mary?
Okay.
Oh, you want to read the whole quote?
I want to read the
quote. And then lead us into
it.
The Hail Mary.
Let me get this up. I closed it. I thought I was done. Oh.
You're never done. Never
I know.
Done here.
Give me some filler. Let's go.
Oh, no, we're just going to stare at you. We're just intently waiting. You're wasting all this airtime.
And interesting facts. I'm going back. Here we go. I'm going to get the wrong one.
Andrew, the whole world's watching.
No pressure.
I can just see people logging out of the call right now.
I know, they're just done with us. Give me the quote. Let's go. It's all the way at the bottom of this article. She said, let's just pray it. In the name of the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. Amen. My dear child, am I not here, I, who am your mother? Are you not under my shadow and protection? Am I not the source of your joy? Are you not in the hollow of my mantle, in the crossing of my arms? Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. In the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.
Our Lady of Guadalupe,
pray for us.
Be safe, be blessed.